Are we exposed? Security teams ask this every day. Vulnerabilities across network, cloud, AI, and OT silos hide the truth, and attackers are watching. Tenable unifies your tools, teams, and data so you can spot and close risks fast. Tenable's AI-powered exposure management gives teams one view of risk, helping them focus, take action, and close critical exposures fast. Visit Tenable.com. Tenable. Your exposure ends here.
When your company earns unlimited 2% cash back on all purchases with Capital One, that's serious business. So Steven at SandCloud got a serious business card, the Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One.
We used our 2% cash back to help build our retail presence.
Savvy, Steven.
And we get big purchasing power, so our business can spend more and earn more.
The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One. What's in your wallet?
Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at CapitalOne.com/SparkCashPlus.
Since 2011, American Giant has been making everyday clothing with extraordinary effort. Not in far-off factories, but right here in the USA. We obsess over fabrics, fit, and details, because if you're going to wear it every day, it should feel great and last for years. From the cut of a hoodie to the finishing of a seam, nothing is overlooked. Our supply chain is tight-knit and local, which means less crisscrossing the country and more care in every step. The result is durable clothing, t-shirts, hoodies, sweatpants, and denim that become part of your life season after season. This isn't fast fashion, it's clothing made with purpose by people who care as much about how it's made as how it fits. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
This is Hidden Killers Week in Review.
A look back at the most prolific stories of the week.
This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi, Stacey Cole, and Todd Michaels.
I'm going to start with this. I don't know anyone who protects a predator other than a predator. And yet that's exactly what we've watched happen for decades at the highest levels of power. Virginia Giuffre's voice was supposed to be buried with her, but it's louder now than ever, rattling the walls of governments, law firms, boardrooms that swore they knew nothing. Today, we're with the former FBI Special Agent Robin Dreeke, former Chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program. We're pulling back the curtain on how predators protect each other, why the system still shelters them, and what happens when silence becomes a survival instinct. This isn't about conspiracy. It's about psychology, about the psychology of power, leverage, and fear. And if you think it ends with Epstein, you are not paying attention. Robin, welcome. And Robin, I want to start here. When you hear the phrase, predators protect predators, What does it mean behaviorally?
I tell you, Tony, I'm so glad we're covering this one. Yet this is a rough one. I mean, it's hard not to get tear jerked when looking at this book, covering this book, and when I hear predators protecting predators. You know, my first response is, "What?" Mm-hmm. Because this is such, out of everything we cover, believe it or not, this is one of the most hardest things I think for us to understand, because it's contemplative, systemic, horrendous behavior over long periods of time. And so when predators are protecting predators, I always just got to look at, all right, what are the fundamentals of human behavior? And that is control, power, feeling safe. And so predators protecting predators is really about people protecting their own mindset and their own mind think about how screwed up the world is around them. So they want to surround themselves in that echo chamber so they can keep going with that abhorrent behavior. Granted, they don't think it is. But if you get in that chamber where you have other predators around you thinking the same thing, yes. And the key here is to always remember, none of these predators are doing it for the other person, because that would require empathy. That would require a bit of altruism about taking care of someone else. None of them are doing that. It is all extremely narcissistic, self-serving. Again, it's a term of art, narcissism. I don't know because I'm not a licensed clinician, but it is extremely, extremely self-serving, and it's the most toxic thing we can possibly see.
No, I mean, it's fascinating to try and jump behind the mind here of this. We're going to try and do that today. Because, I mean, it's simple to look at this and go, these are horrible, horrendous human beings. They are. But how do they operate? And operate in such public arenas in front of all of us? And even when we see them, I mean, we have a very bizarre ability as human beings who are not predators to make excuses for them, to have some sort of ways of rationalizing that this person's behavior over here doesn't influence this over here. It's bizarre because the behavior is so abhorrent. It's about as bad as it gets, you know, next to murder. I think some could argue it's even worse. But we, as a society, even when we know about it, we're just like, well, you know, I mean, the examples that come to my mind would be like some obvious ones. R. Kelly, you know, for right. example, you know, we knew what the hell he was doing. We saw the tape came out. There he is in his home. I mean, there's a frickin' Soul Train award in the background. And he's there with a child. And everybody's like, well, maybe it was this, maybe it was that. It's like, it's him. It's him in the video. This is his house. Clearly, it is his house. There's his award. And he had an even more successful stretch of his career after all of that came out. I mean, it's really fascinating the way that we can kind of compartmentalize these people on the outside. And I don't want to say we're protecting them as a society, but is it because the truth is just too dark and our brains just can't quite contemplate how one could actually be doing these sort of things to others? So in a way, we act as if they're not?
There's a lot of reasons and a lot of data points on this one. So when you take someone of celebrity and notoriety, a lot of times we don't want to believe it. And so we're going to rationalize away what we're seeing, because if we acknowledge the fact that these people that we might have idolized and might set up on a pedestal and we admired, to say they're doing these abhorrent things would invalidate our own ability to see the world accurately around us. And so that goes against how we see the world and how we see ourselves. And so we're reluctant to do those things. So imagine this, we love doing these thought experiments because it really helps us understand deeper. Remove, like R. Kelly, great example. Remove his title, name, or position from that entire scenario and ask yourself, if you saw that behavior from someone that you didn't know, would your action be different? Yes. And so that's definitely part of the data points on it. And also, we all experience this in our lives as well. The vast majority of people do fall within the normal parameters of human behavior. We all have trauma. We've all had experiences. But very rarely have we, unless we're part of this culture and part of this world, have we been exposed to it at that personal one-on-one level. And so because we haven't, we don't have an exposure to it. And so we can't believe it's true, or we just saw it in a movie. Or a lot of times the worst thing some people will do is that, oh, they must all just be in, it's that group of people. It's all condoned. It's see what I mean? So people will do all these amazing things to rationalize away horrendous things they're seeing because they don't want to believe it. Because again, it hurts how we see the world around us. It hurts our self-image. It is hard to explain, but it's never just one thing that is causing it.
Yeah.
So why do we give celebrities a pass? Why do we, sorry, Tony, I'm invoking Michael Jackson because I just heard Thriller.
I was thinking of Jared from Subway too.
Well,
yeah, I mean, they're all coming back to me now.
Well, when we have these great, and Stacey, and to your point, when we have these great, rags to riches stories, or not even rags to riches, or just these great stories that we want to believe, we don't want to have it crashed around us because, again, it invalidates how we see people, how we see others, and our own ability to assess. We always want to believe the best in ourselves. We want to believe that we're really good at discerning crazy from not crazy. But the reality is, no. So this is where it's okay to be honest. It's okay to be fallible. And if you see something that's off, one of the greatest things we can have as a human being is humility to say, oops, I was wrong there. you know, we really need to have some deeper curiosity of what the hell's that? We got to dive deeper on that. You know, the longer you do things like this and the longer you work with people, the more you realize you're never 100% right. And you can't be right all the time. But what you should so see is recognizing someone in something that is deviating from a norm of what we expect to see, because that's what it is, too. We expect to see an arc because this is what they're really, I mean, just think about this. Celebrities and people of notoriety are really, and most people on TikTok and everything right now, are really great at posting that 5-second highlight reel of their lives.
Yeah.
And so we start believing the 5-second highlight reel is that arc. And so it gets harder and harder to believe there's a major spike from what we think we're going to see and expect. Because again, and then we fall into the realm of, well, it must not be right because it's a deviation. No, you're only seeing such a small glimmer. That's why I continually be open to the data point you're seeing. And also be discerning as them as well, because people can come at you and people can try to discredit. I mean, there's so many things that come in. That's why I go back to what we said a couple shows ago. Use the word maybe.
Yeah. I mean, what you're saying, I mean, it goes against how we see the world around us. I mean, we're not good at accepting the world around us. We want to go with this vision that we have for it, or what we've told ourselves or what we've been told. Is that like an evolutionary problem? Are we just not very evolved and very good at seeing our surroundings in for what they actually are? I'm fascinated by this. I'm not shocked by anything anymore. I mean, I think all of us kind of feel that way to a certain extent. I think I kind of feel numb to a certain extent of just the amount of figures that, you know, we thought were good and pure and philanthropists and this and that. And then it turns out like, oh shit, like all this isn't true. I don't have any problem seeing the world of what is around me. I have no problem saying I'm wrong or that what I thought was correct is incorrect. I like that. That is a freeing thing. It seems very youthful. It seems very emotionally immature to look at the world in any other way. Is this a problem of emotional maturity that we as a society are very stunted as a whole, or at least in massive amounts of people are, and a very small percentage is able to kind of see through the blinders and is able to realize, no, this shit is crazy. But then when you raise your hand and say it before anybody else is saying it, you get shot down. You get shut down. Nobody wants to hear what reality might be, even if it is very dark.
It's a really great question. Anytime we start talking about our evolution and us as a species, I really love it because it really helps us explain and understand what's going on and what we're seeing and observing. Believe it or not, we are really, really good as a species, not as good as some animals in the kingdom, of seeing things that spike out of the norm of what we expect to see, because we are constantly baselining the world around us. For what purpose? To feel safe. And as the Homo sapiens we are really, really skilled at controlling our environment around us, or at least trying to feel safe. We control our food sources, we control our shelter, we control fire, we control all these things so we can provide and we have offspring. And in order to control the world, in order to control threats, we're very good at seeing what stands out from normal. That is a very pragmatic, objective thinking brain. And the way that you're just describing yourself, Tony, and we all try to do this is, and we all think we're doing this, is we're objective seeing data coming in. We see data come in, we assess what is cause and effect, and that's why we can move forward. And this is what we're doing. We're doing investigations and when we're doing assessments like this. But what happens is that's the higher functioning brain we all have. When you're talking about these other reactions that people are having, you're dealing with emotional reactions. Emotional reactions is the lower thinking brain. When people are reacting emotionally, that is, emotional regulation is low. And we've talked about this numerous times. You know, when it comes to emotional intelligence, EQ, one of five facets of emotional intelligence is our emotional regulation. And so when we are emotionally reacting to something, which is the fight or flight that kicks in, and defensiveness, all these things where we get emotionally hijacked, that is our lower thinking brain engaging. And that's why we're subjected to chaos. And so what does social media do right now? What's TikTok's, Instagram, Facebook, everything, all the social networking platforms, typically they're getting you to react emotionally to things because that sells ad space. And so but as a species, we're extremely capable of it. It's just a matter of how do we get that engaged? And we get it engaged by asking, what went on here? What's going on? What's the cause and effect? Asking those what questions. When we start asking why questions, why did this person do this? Then we get very subjective. And when we get the subjective brain going, there's lots of opinions. And opinions tend to not be as focused on facts. Can be, but they're influenced by emotions. Keep to the what questions. What specifically happened? What was the outcome they were seeking? What caused them to do this? And because, again, it keeps that cognitive, thoughtful brain engaged.
Yeah. Could it be that there's just evil people? I mean, is this the purest form of evil that we've seen?
So it's interesting when you and a lot of people will attach the label of evil to things and acts and everything. And that, believe it or not, so again, let's do a thought experiment. Here's the challenge. As a species, we are evolved into what we are because of our belief systems that allow us to move beyond 150 in a tribe to more collective things, which is our religion, our beliefs, our ethics, our morals. All these things allow us to collect them together. And in order to do that, we created a word like evil because it keeps us in fear. When we fear evil, it keeps us corralled as a species. And that's not to say there isn't evil. I'm just saying that it's a word that people will use. But the universe is just being what the universe is. And you'll have two sides of the coin on this. You have people that'll say, yes, people are born evil or do evil acts. And then you'll have people that are anthropologists coming in and scientists coming in and say, well, here's the cause and effect of the genetics and biology that happened and the nature and nurture part that happened earlier on in life. And they were just formed in this horrendous soup of bad. And they weren't born evil. They were just created, unless you're dealing with a Koberger type. So, long answer to your question, Stacey, is I really think it depends on how you see the world and the universe. It can be evil to some people. It can be a really horrendous mix of bad genetics and biology and experiences that created in others. So I think all of it above.
It is the way that these figures are protected amongst their circles. Is this a uniquely American problem? Is this the way that we see it, or does this sort of thing go on everywhere around the world? I mean, does it vary culturally in terms of how we interact with one another, with our societies, and other cultures similar to us seem to have similar issues? Does it have to do with the way that we live our lives with the societies that we have and where we live?
That's a really good question, too. So let's do a paintbrush first.
Yeah.
Paintbrush, my initial response is no, because we are all Homo sapiens. It doesn't, us as a species doesn't distinguish between anything. We are just all genetically coded for the same vulnerability, same impact of the world around us, our genetics, biology, and all that thing. Social status and social situations will fuel it or tamp it down. I would think, when you think about us in the United States and what we're facing here, there are potentially some accelerators that can throw fuel on a fire of someone that is more inclined to it than less inclined to it. That might not happen another place in the world. And the only reason I say it is because our laws and our constitution and the things that we have for penalties for people tend to be lower here than in other cultures. Believe it or not, people who think we're so oppressive, I mean, seriously, just travel anywhere in the Middle East.
Sure.
You'll see that. No, I mean, so remember this: fear is the greatest motivator human beings have from doing bad things. And in our country, the fear of being caught for that here compared to the fear of being caught and having parts of your body lopped off from other countries is much higher. And so, as a species, it's universal. As nation states, I think it will probably vary depending on motivations put in place by penal codes and also the amount of people that you can collectively get in a place that can get in that horrible group think. But with the advent of these horrendous online sites and the dark web and the ability to travel, it has spread more around the world, I think, globally than it used to be able to.
And what's very disturbing about Virginia Giuffre's book and the whole Epstein list and everything is, you know, in our worlds, we think a lot of times we think of predators as, oh, they're out on the dark web. They're these creepy people that are hiding behind computers, you know, in their parents' basement or whatever it may be, that are they're the scum of society, and obvious scum of society too. But they're not. I mean, what we're talking about here in this case is leaders of the world, you know, business leaders, country leaders, things of that nature, people that are not, they do not fit that profile whatsoever, but something in them at some point said, oh, this is okay for me to do. And what makes it even more disturbing is it wasn't just hidden, you know, in some hotel room, in some one-off thing that no one's going to find out about. I mean, we're talking about Epstein. We're talking about Epstein Island. People, like, literally traded these teenage girls as currency. And they had to collectively come together and say, yeah, let's do all this together. Let's go over to Jeff's place. And because it's hard to wrap my mind around how this conversation even begins. How one is if you have nothing going on in that world, you're not a predator, you haven't done anything, and then somehow you get roped into it in some way, shape, or form because of the people that you end up being around or surrounding yourself with for whatever you're doing in life. That to me is such a weird concept of like, well, I never tried that before. This seems like a great idea. I mean, where the hell? I mean, where does that come from? I mean, it's just baffling to me how one could go from not being that to then getting entangled in this sort of stuff and becoming a frequent flyer on the Lolita Express.
Well, and let me interject something here. You know, there had to be people in this orbit. And this is both political sides have been caught up in this web. You know, there are people on the periphery going, you're going where? You're doing what? They know about this. What made them turn a blind eye? What made them go, all right, well, you go do whatever it is you're doing over there this weekend? I mean,
well, I want to talk about that, but I want to talk about the actual interaction first, because I do want to hear, I want to talk about that angle of the folks that are surrounding it, but I want to talk about what I was saying first, is the actual almost like recruiting, if you will, of someone to join the club.
So to me, it's unlocking the darkness from within. I think it's the best way that I can really kind of think about it. And so I'm going to take it to my world of spy recruiting. And because there's a lot of similarity here, as much as people are groomed into being trafficked through shame and manipulation tactics, what's happening on the other end to potentials is it always starts with a question. A very softball type question. And the question, so in my world of recruiting an intelligence officer, you know, one of the ways I would start testing whether this individual was willing to break a rule that they had in place, like an intelligence officer that I'm trying to recruit that's working on behalf of a foreign nation, they were not allowed to have outside employment outside of their diplomatic duties. And so I would then use sources of people around them and myself, if I had an interaction, of asking about some of their challenges, priorities, and pain points in life, and ask them what kind of things they're willing to do in order to make those things happen. In other words, hey, I have an opportunity to make some money on the side for you and your family, if that's something you think you're comfortable doing. And then based on that reaction, so here's what I would do. Even if they said no, but if they'd sit there like this for a second and thought about it, oh, you're thinking about it. They're thinking about going down a darker path, a more challenging path, a path that had a little more danger in it in order to service a priority and need in their life. And so now we flip it to the Epstein type group of people. So when you sensitize, because I call it sensitizing your environment towards an end goal you're seeking, you have someone like Epstein or Giselle or whoever say, hey, We're going to be having a party this weekend at the place. And, you know, you can come at two different times. You can come when we have, it's just going to be this one group. But if you're able to make it for this one, we're going to have so-and-so-and-so. And we're actually going to have some of our younger women there. You know, so you don't even say that. You just kind of sensitize them towards who the audience is going to be, who the attendees are going to be. Watch reaction.
And so, it's a test.
I think it's all a test. So again, I don't know it. I only know from the spy recruitment side. But yeah, to me, the way that they start seeing who wants to join this club is who is going to give it a thought of who they want to be. Now, see, people like us, I hear that you're going to do that, and I'm sharing what is going on in my life to my loving critics. And my loving critics say to me, what the hell are you, nuts? You don't go there. What the hell has that got to do with anything? Why would those people be there? Stay away from that crazy. Now, people that don't know, and then they're just going, and so it's a slight grooming and testing to who might be willing to entertain the thought of that.
And I want to go to Stacey's point about that, where the surrounding folks normalize it, where it's it's like, oh, and like, you know what's going on over there, but you really don't, and you're going to tell yourself it's something else, but it's not. That's the other angle where, okay, because it's not just the circle of the people who are actionably doing these horrible things to people. It's the infrastructure around it, the people who may not necessarily be participating in the act, but allowing that infrastructure to thrive and allowing it to go on, even without necessarily a threat of of them being exposed for something. That it's just, is it more just of an ease of operation of, well, we kind of need this person here for this, so whatever they're doing over there, I don't need to know about, and I'm just going to pretend it's not happening. That seems to be a weird way of thinking, but it seems to be, how these sort of structures flourish.
So social proof is a huge part of all these things. And when one person, matter of fact, even in her book, she starts out by saying, you know, when one guy was picking her up on the side of the road, when she just left being raped, there was another girl in the car waving her in saying, it's okay to come on in. So just using social proof in these situations will do just that. And so say you have someone that is in, to your point, is in this circle, but not the close, darker circle. And it's so much easier to really think about how Diddy was doing his white parties, right?
Yeah. Yes.
And then after a certain point, people get kicked out because, you know, we had our special club, but until then, everyone is kind of on the peripheral. And this is kind of the social proof. It was going on and you're part of it. It was, but not really, because so here's what a healthier person is doing that might be there, but questioning, hey, what's going on here? What are they going to see? They're going to see social proof by, hey, all these high powered people don't seem to have a problem with what's going on and who's there. So it must be okay. And right. Then if they see the younger ladies there, they're going to be looking for cues from them. And if they've been trained and groomed to behave a certain way, what are they going to see from them? That they're happy, they're go-lucky, they're happy to be there, and they're so grateful that they're having these opportunities. You know, whatever they've been told and scripted to do in that environment to give that facade of, oh, this must be okay. I must be the wrong one that's wrong. Because again, if they're kept from talking to each other about what they're seeing, it's easier to just... oh, it must be okay. You know, how many times have everyone said that at some point in their life? It must be okay, because they all think it.
Right.
And when you have people that have a lot of power and you're like, oh, well, they're participating in this. Oh, well, it must be okay. I mean, I guess that's how some will filter it through their brains. What's, I guess, another kind of just hard to wrap your mind around, it's a healthy mind around, is it the more these people have to lose, the darker their shit gets? Because, I mean, if you're thinking of the creep in the basement, you know, preying on people that way, you know, they have nothing to lose. They're already pretty much at rock bottom in life. But you have these people who are literally at the top of the world, where if this were to be exposed, if someone were to find out what the hell you're doing, I mean, or does that not even run through their mind? Is it just this feeling of infallibility that no one's ever going to find these things out that enables them, is somewhere in their mind to say, well, I got nothing to worry about, nothing to lose. I have nothing to worry about, because if there's just no way of being caught, we're so insulated here. I mean, it's Is it because they've been insulated for so long and we're finally in a culture where we're exposing this sort of shit and not just going, well, you know, men will be men and writing it off as we have basically through almost all of history? This is kind of a new thing that we're verbally saying, yeah, this is not okay. This is a relatively new concept to say predatory behavior towards anyone is not an acceptable thing to do.
It's probably one of the only benefits of social media right now is that a lot more is getting exposed and a lot of people are able to take videos and photos of things that otherwise were able to be hidden. There's a lot of things that are going on in there that are causing this. I think in most of these cases, they think they're inoculated against repercussions because of the powerful people around them. You know, Diddy, I think, is the greatest example of someone who felt like he created his own nation state with his own laws. And that's what a lot of these people are doing. They're not subjected to anything. I mean, Epstein had his own island. I don't have a law. It's my island. I can do what I want. It's my island. It's my law. And the other thing, too, here, I think is really, really important to keep in mind. And because you use that word, I can't remember the word you used, Tony, wealthy, rich, or no, successful.
Okay.
No, they're not. So they're defining success by materialism. And how many of them are happy? They keep doing this because they're caught up in what they're trying to get these dopamine hits from these abhorrent actions, because that's what they've been taught is actually it. When actually the greatest thing you can actually do is just have a great healthy conversation with someone. And so they get caught up in this maelstrom of, I got to do this to get more, because they keep seeking this high that is just fleeting from them because they've misdefined how to do it because they got such broken brains.
Yeah. Where does the breaking start? I can understand the psychology of the women who are victimized in this, of very, you know, being victimized at a very young age. And I can understand how that can lead into the path of how they end up, you know, where they end up. And it's sad and it's heartbreaking. I can understand, but like, the victimizers, the ones that are doing the horrible things to these people, where does that start? Where that's another broken brain right there that's thinking that is you know, an acceptable thing to do. That I'm gonna guess it's not something that suddenly, you know, flips at age 35 and you're like, oh shit, well, I'm gonna go be a predator. I'm gonna guess you've probably always been a predator from a very formative age.
Well, and probably nobody stepped in and said this is not acceptable behavior and stopped it. Doesn't that seem possible?
It's all accurate. What happens is at a very young age, you know, someone defined for you what success is. And if you're defined at a young age, you're in those formative years of 9 to 19, 24, before the prefrontal lobe, and you're told that success is power and control, title and position, and service of self rather than service of others, and you are witnessing these behaviors around you, and you're witnessing behaviors of people with money and power and accolades, and they were telling you, I'm successful, I'm happy, and now you're told that you're supposed to pursue happy and that this is what happy is and this is what success is. You then get caught up in that maelstrom of doing that thing. And that's why we start chasing it. It's such an interesting challenge. The studies are really solid on this. The fact that, you know, capitalism is the most successful methodology for the progress of our species and actually getting rid of great wrongs in the world. But then because socialism can always turns dark and bad. In all the experiments that they've done throughout the world. But at the same time, though, there's a lot of excesses that come because of capitalism, because of the power, because of the control. And so that's why regulations seem to fail it a lot. But it's this exact where it starts. It starts with a young age. People are groomed, not groomed in a negative, but just groomed, like growing the thinking that this is what success and happiness comes from, power and control. Again, I keep going back to this control thing. It is such part of our species to control. And when control goes excessive, because remember, our brains reward us for a certain amount of control because it allows us to feel safe. But at the same time, control to excess becomes narcissism. And then if you are edging anywhere up on that sliding scale of psychopathy where you start lacking empathy and you objectify a human being, you rationalize your behavior towards others for yourself, and you can rationalize because you're doing it for a greater good, oh my God, that's where chaos ensues. And so it does come from a younger age. But here's the good part of it too. I've seen many people, and myself included, you know, I thought leadership was a much different thing than it evolved into being throughout my life. And a leadership is literally just a life of service and not of self. And I think mm-hmm. what a lot of people at an early age get indoctrinated into is that leadership and power and happiness is in service of self. And that's where I think a lot of these important behaviors are growing into.
Virginia Roberts Giuffre has a new book out. It is called Nobody's Girl. It's her posthumous release, and it goes into the details of her life, of what happened when she was being trafficked from Mar-a-Lago to Epstein Island. And it's a dark one, but it is, I think, a read that everybody should check mm-hmm. out. Robin Drake, retired FBI special agent, chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program, is with us talking about this book and the concept of how these people operate and where their brains are at and how it got from point A to point B. How do predators identify others who will protect them? What sort of psychological radar are they looking for in others when they know they need to insulate themselves? Not necessarily that they're inviting their other rich and powerful friends along for their ride, but when they're trying to find the folks that are going to help put up that structure that's going to shield them from the rest of the world, at least in their mind, finding out what exactly they're up to. What kind of people are those folks that otherwise, you know, would not engage in the actual predatory behavior, but they're enabling it, they're next to it, they're living their own lives, they may have their own families, their own everything, and they look like normal human beings and carry out normal, healthy activities in their lives outside of being the infrastructure that keeps these people in the places that they do. I mean, who are they targeting? I mean, who are the prime candidates to be essentially these individuals, flying monkeys, if you will?
So here's what I think is probably happening. There's I don't think they actually have a test or an interview process.
No.
For hey, you look like somebody like, could really
yeah check these boxes and
but think about this, you know. So again, these thought experiments do us a great service, and that is, who are the types of people that typically do this? These are people that objectify human beings. They love using power control. You can see them rationalize abhorrent behavior. And so, I mean, so say you're someone at that level of Epstein, and you're just watching the news, and you're watching news, and you're watching, you know, any kind of, you know, tickers online for, you know, someone, you know, like a CEO's behavior in this, or you're seeing, you know, a lawsuit being filed against this, and you're watching public statements being made, you're watching this person being interviewed. There's going to be a lot of leakage about how that person views individuals, how they view the world. And if you start resonating with someone, it's like, hey, I would do it the same way as this guy. I would say exactly the way he is. I would, you know, because what is it? What are they doing? They're identifying someone who has no problem objectifying another human being. They've got a lot of verbal and nonverbal leakage about what's more important, the bottom line or the human being. And so when you start getting a little bit of leakage, then what happens next? Well, I'll give them a call and say, hey, you know, what you said online the other day, you know, I know you're getting a lot of haters out there, but you know what? I really understand what you're saying. You know, you're part of the club of, hey, well, we all got to be in this together. We've got to support each other. Why don't you come out to my island sometime? And so you start getting a little, what you're just testing waters. And it's a test to see how collectively we are all thinking together. Remember, they aren't consciously looking for allies for them to do bad behaviors. They're just seeing if you want to do bad behaviors with me, because you might bring more people into the fray that I can take advantage of as well. I don't mm-hmm. think they're doing it to take care of each other. I think they're doing it for they can identify more prey. None of these people are doing anything for anyone else but themselves. And so predators identifying other predators, it's not for the benefit of doing something kind to the predator. No, they want the predator's prey that they're going to bring into their circle.
So how do we protect young women? How do we protect young boys? How do we protect our youth and the vulnerable from predators like this? Is there a way to protect them? I mean, here we are in the year 2025, and we're still talking about things like this. This sounds like it's the dark ages. We should have better protections in place, and yet it feels like we're kind of on our own.
We got to pay attention. Oh my gosh. And we don't rationalize away the things you're seeing, observing. I did a piece, I think it was because of the assassination of Charlie Kirk. And again, the same thing, kids being self-radicalized and going down the path of darkness and the dark triad. And it's hard to see. It's kind of like, and again, this isn't saying that no parent is doing their job, because everyone thinks they're doing a great job, but do this for yourself. Start keeping a journal, a photographic record, a journal. I, like my wife and I, we're out camping right now. You can see I'm in my camper. I apologize. Mm-hmm. And so every time we go on a trip, I actually have a journal. I call it our camping journal. I take some photos. I take some things we're doing, and I put it. And so what I highly recommend people doing is do this for people in your life, your family members, especially your children. Keep a record. Start family traditions of communicating and interactions at a young, young age. Get people in the habit of communicating openly and honestly. The only way they're going to do that is if you don't shame them from what they're saying. You don't mm-hmm. judge what's coming out of their mouth. Mm-hmm. You be there to listen. And if you start journaling, where you're going to start noticing, you're going to start noticing an arc, a behavior of the people in their lives, of the types of friends they have, the amount they're communicating with you. And then once a week, assess how much do we communicate. Is it staying the same or is it getting less? Because what happens is that when children, young adults, or even adults start going down a darker path, there's a shift in behavior. But it doesn't go from 0 to 100. It's a gradual shift, but there was all of a sudden a shift where some becomes more and more isolated, more and more to themselves. And if you're worried that you're not going to recognize it, you will recognize it. If you look back, all right, a month ago, 2 months ago, 3 months ago, we were talking this much about this kind of things. And over here, somewhere along the way, we stopped talking. So you can actually look at the data and say, where did this happen? It happened here. And then you can walk up to Sally or John and say, hey, I noticed back about a month ago, you didn't seem to start talking as much. What's going on? I'm here for you. What is going on? And so you can actually help them identify, because they might, people are oblivious what happens, but something happened here. What was it?
Well, we live in a world, I mean, obviously everyone's upbringing is a little bit different. It does all start at home if you have, you know, stable and healthy communications and you raise your children in reality, on reality's term, and don't hide behind ignorance as a virtue or mistake, you know, innocence for ignorance. I think you can make a huge difference in where those young people are going to end up and the type of people they're going to end up surrounding themselves with, and knowing, and they'll have a knowledge of, yes, this is a healthy communication I'm having with someone, or this is a big red flag. I feel like we have a world where we have a lot of kids that are very educated on this topic, and they're able to steer away from getting themselves into a situation mm-hmm. where they're going to get groomed and they're going to have somebody take advantage of them. Again, it starts at home, and it's the luck of the draw for all of us as to who and what we're born into. But we also, I think you can have the most well-meaning family in the world, and if you're protecting that child's innocence with ignorance, you're not helping that child. I mean, at some point, you got to let the kid wake up. You can't protect them from the world forever, because if you keep protecting them from the world forever, they're going to fall into the pits. And I feel like we do a lot of that. It's, oh, they're so innocent. And and it sucks that we live in a really shitty world with a lot of predatory people. So yes, realistically, when they're really young, we don't need to be educating them necessarily, because they're not going to understand what the hell half of this is. But I feel like at a younger age, we need to start teaching kids about this sort of shit, and we don't. I mean, I started educating my daughter at like 5 or 6. We were watching To Catch a Predator. And I felt she needed to understand there's shitty people out there. There's scary people out there in this world. And as much as I'd like to be there 1,000% around her at all times of the day, I can't be, because I'd like her to grow and develop into a strong, independent woman. She needs to have these building blocks in her life, in her mind, to understand what she's up against out there, so she doesn't fall into those pits. But just as a parent, and you've probably seen it too, you know, when your kids were younger, there's so many parents who, kids of even the same ages, there's so many kids are completely ignorant to this topic. And yeah, they're the ones that are going to fall into this shit, because they're not going to see the red flags, and they're going to go, oh, this guy really does seem like a nice guy. He must really care about me. And then they fall down those roads. It's we don't educate at home enough on so many of these things. And again, it's circumstantial. You're at the odds of what kind of education your parent had. And it doesn't mean college education, just common sense education, right, on what you're going to prepare your children for in the world around them. Because sometimes the parents are just as ignorant as some of the victims can be, because they don't know what they're up against.
Yeah, the I'm having some fun flashbacks with my kids. When it came to rules in our house, we always had a reason why we had a rule. When I was in the Marine Corps, one of the things I did in the Marine Corps was I was at Parris Island, South Carolina. I was a company commander in charge of a bunch of recruits at boot camp and drill instructors in the whole world down there. And I remember, believe it or not, every single one of my drill instructors knew that you could not punish a recruit with push-ups or any of the other crazy things you could do unless the recruit actually knew what rule they broke. So there's always it wasn't just haphazard like people think it is, just for the hell of it. There's actually, you broke a rule, here's a consequence, and the recruit had to know what the consequence was and why the rule was in place. And so I did the same thing with my kids, not like boot camp, but what I did was, we didn't have rules for the sake of rules, or just because dad said so or mom said so. There is a reason, and there's a real world reason why we have a curfew. There's a real world reason why it can't be online. And my daughter related to me recently that I when she was about 12 or 13 years old, she said I scared the living hell out of her because I wouldn't let her do something, because I always would start the statement with, you want to know why we have the rule? You want to hear a story? And she said I told her one of these horrendous stories like we're just talking about. It scared the living hell out of her. And now she understood why I had that rule in place. And I think I traumatized her, but at the same time, my wife said, but she didn't get in trouble, did she? I said, no, she didn't. Good point. But, I'm with you. You know, it's understanding at what point, you know, you expose people to the world and the reality of the world, but understanding that it's a very safe place to be if you surround yourself with safe people. And to that point also, it was understanding who's in their lives. My kids, we knew, you know, my wife, to her huge credit, she always wanted to make sure that we were the house that everyone wants to come to, that they felt safe coming to. My kids would be very happy bringing their kids to, because then we knew everyone in their lives. And when one of my kids all of a sudden would have someone that kind of deviated from their norm of individuals and they spiked, then we started having conversations. Tell me about this person. I don't understand what you see here, because this person looks different than this people over here. Mm-hmm. We didn't judge it. We asked questions about it, which got their eyes to open up a little bit more, and they started making decisions. And those people self-selected outside of their circle. Then they moved away. But it came a lot of engagement. And then also, I know some of the challenges that if parents and guardians and others have a problem at home, or they're not seeing anything at home because they're always at work so much, or whatever the reason. Remember, you can ask people in your kids' lives if they're seeing differences and changes. Teachers are seeing your kids every single day. Yep. You can say, hey, from the beginning of the year to now, what have you seen? I'm not talking about grades. Those are things that are great. They're great indicators. But seriously, what do you see with their social interactions they're having? When have they had good days, bad days? What's their norm pattern that you're seeing at school? And start taking note of that. Write these things down. I know it sounds like it's energy, but it is. It's really, really, really important, because sometimes in order to have clarity of thought and objectivity. You have to see things from point A to point B objectively, because otherwise we might start rationalizing away what we're seeing. No, if you write it down, it'll be so much more telling for you. It'll become so much more obvious. And as things start shifting to a potential negative dark area, you're going to catch it so much more fast. And then there won't become a problem.
The FBI has the Epstein tapes, the depositions, names. In your opinion, why is justice frozen here? why is it just sit when they know who these people are? Obviously, many of them in power, maybe people there as well. I mean, why? Maybe that's the answer. Why does this just sit? That's the biggest question, obviously, I think the American people have. Why the hell, with this information that exists, why is nothing done?
So I'm going to give you the answer of what I typically see in situations like this. Yeah. This ends, and it's going to be the really boring answer, and that is, it's simply not organized enough to give a clarity of answer. I've been part of so many investigations where someone will come for an answer. So here's a great example. And I think we've talked about this before, where say, and this happens all the time, you know, say some big thing happens in the world or in the government or an investigation. Here's what typically happens. Very rarely is it just one field office and one case agent. And there's always one case agent that's the main corraller of information in the investigation. But there are so many leads. There's so many things that are put out all across the bureau. And in this case, if you have people that are dealing all across the world, so many other data points and people that are doing interviews and collecting information and should be then routing it all back to the main case file. But there's a lot of collection going on all over the place, and things just sometimes aren't done right. They're not done well, and collecting it all in one place. And
we've had plenty of time to figure this shit out by now. I mean, this is not like this
Then I'll do the other side, Tony. It's like, hey, it could be, you know, it could be a cover up, or it could be a lack of wanting to see or find the details. But I think, you know, Cash Patel did a decent job in the first couple of weeks when he promised before he came in as a director to give a lot of exposure, right, to all these things. And guys like me that are former Bureau guys are kind of laughing when he's saying that, because I know how these things work. You know, so here's an example. When we work a recruitment operation, which is the highest level of protecting an individual, because we're protecting not just the individual that we've recruited that is working on behalf of a foreign government now working for us, giving us huge top secret things, but the tools, methodologies, and technologies and individuals we use to get them on board is also protected. We kept this on separate systems that were closed held in back rooms so that no one in the world could ever get access to it, but a very, very small, closely held group of people for the protection of the individual. Mm-hmm. And I remember when Cash Patel first came on board and he's saying he's going to expose everything, I'm kind of laughing, because if he doesn't know which door to open or can't find the people that actually know where the files are at, he'll never find anything. And so maybe it's all in one spot. Maybe it's not. Maybe it's, who knows? It's a government bureaucracy. This point, it could be any of those reasons above. It could be simple bureaucracy. It could be because it never existed. It could be because they're covering it up. I got no idea.
It could be the victims might come out with the list. The victims might start naming the people, and I'm surprised that they haven't, to be honest with you.
And that's why, Stacey, I do think that I edge on this one, because you know me with conspiracy theories. I don't think it's so rare that there's a conspiracy theory, because especially when you have so many people involved, you would have leakage. And you'd have leakage of partial lists and things like that. Especially right now, there's so many disgruntled people inside the government that have also retired from the government that have no skin in the game that would say, bleh. I mean, so here, I retired from the Bureau in 2018, and you know, if I had skin in the game in anything, I would just blurt it out. I could make a buck for myself. I write a book about it. I mean, but you're not seeing anyone doing that. Probably because they don't know about it. It's not there. Again, that's just Robin Dreeks' anti conspiracy theory on stuff, because I've never been exposed to the theory of one that ever played out, because government just can't keep secrets. People in it, they just leak like sieves.
Well, here's the thing, you know, like you were saying, Stacey, like the victims coming out and saying it, and they have. People have been naming names for years.
Yep.
It just nobody wants to accept the reality of the names they're naming. And yeah, and then the people that are being named have enough flying monkeys around their narcissistic chambers to send out and go, no, that's not true. And let's attack the messenger and then discredit or try and discredit the people who are trying to speak out about it. So it's not like the names aren't out there. We all know a lot of the names. I mean, I'm sure there's plenty that we will be surprised by if they come out. But at the same point, society as a whole, if it sounds icky, if it goes against their belief in who that person is, for whatever reason, they have this belief in a specific individual. And I'm not making an example of any specific person, but if it goes against that, then they're not going to accept it.
Yeah. So here's what I'm sorry, Tony. So to your point on this, here's what I think is a more probable thing that's happened here. It's not a collective thought of conspiracy or cover-up, but to your exact point, so all these leads get sent out to all these different places at all different times over a long period of time all across the world to interview this person, contact this person, and then what happens is that person does that interview, but that mindset of, oh, couldn't possibly be this, and you rationalize away this, and so that person that did that one interview kind of downplays it or shuffles it off or doesn't get uploaded because the other person that was supposed to upload it didn't think it was much of a big deal at the time. So what happens is all those people and all those victims are identified. They were all talked to, but because you had a lot of holes in the bucket of holding it together, just didn't care or didn't think it was much. It just didn't get into, it didn't get consolidated into something more solid. So I think it all probably happened where they did do all the things they're supposed to do. Because I don't know why they wouldn't have, because there's not a collective person that says, hey, let's have a conspiracy to cover this up. It just doesn't happen that way. But I think because they weren't doing it, because of all the way that people's brains are working, I think it was just leaking out before it got an ability to kind of get a collective together. That's why I think we're seeing it like we are. It's kind of piecemeal here, because I don't think anyone ever came together and said, we need to do this. That makes
how
more sense?
Yeah. How do you think a society would react in America? You know, let's say the list finally comes out, and let's say it names a whole bunch of people, including ones that we don't know about, ones that we already, you know, like, oh my God, I didn't realize that, you know, the jackalope from the America's Funniest People was a predator, you know, like just, you know, weird shit. I mean, I don't think anyone can get mad at me for making an example of the jackalope. So I made up a fake, I mean, but, and like
they're
five people remember the jackalope. Dave Coulier, yes, I'm the jackalope. He talked like that. It was a real funny bit. But things like that, I mean, but a real human being, if a bunch of names are to drop, how do you think society will react? Or it'll be just, is it going to be a real kind of big anticlimactic moment where we think, oh my gosh, all these people are going down? Or is it just going to be like everything else has been, where it's like the ones who want to believe it will believe it, the ones where it goes against what they want to believe of people in their own bubble of reality just won't, and we'll just keep moving along? I mean, there's still people that will go pay to go see Bill Cosby to this day.
No. You know?
Exactly. I mean, yeah. I think that's exactly, I think you'll have a bunch of people that say, oh my gosh, you have a bunch of people that'll be, I mean, most of us are inoculated against, you know, crazy crap already.
Yeah.
And you're like, all right. And then you'll have people that are defend it. Like it's all conspiracy. You all made this up, and the other side will be just the opposite. You didn't include as much. I mean, people be believing it, people be disbelieving it, and other people be inoculated against it. And at the end of the day, what's it really going to matter? We're going to be watching then a trial. And most likely we'll think that people got off too light and we're moving on. I mean, that's, if we keep playing the same tape again and again, and
I know,
again,
I know,
you know, yeah. I mean, I keep going back to this Diddy case. I mean, how much you got to watch someone doing something horrendous and horrible and pretty much get away with the entire thing and everyone going, huh? Oh, well.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, it's a feeling of collective helplessness, I think, that we have. And we've been groomed this way by society, by some of these people in power, to feel helpless. And it's like, well, they're going to do what they're going to do. And it's sad. It's disturbing.
So I think best we can keep doing is to try to get to a point, because we keep losing faith in government institutions, you know, and our criminal justice system because of things like this sometimes, although it's still the best in the world. But that's why I think, you know, books like hers and other people that are talking about what they went through as victims really mm-hmm. goes a long way in trying to help us keeping it from happening in the first place. Yeah. You know, because if we don't get to the point where we have these types of victims, then we don't have to worry about a system failing us.
If you can do more offense, if you can start it at home, like we were talking about earlier, if there's more of that, at the end of the day, it just comes down to having a strong home, a strong family, raising children by competent people who have a clue on how to do it. If we can get better there, a lot of these other problems tend to take care of themselves. They were not always playing defense on predators. But, I mean, that's a problem I don't think we're going to fix anytime soon.
I know, and if we can't do that, I mean, how many times have we seen, you know, Child Protective Services fail too? You know, when we see all the money going into these different programs, you know, how about actually put in some place where, you know, let's go back to, you know, the Rudy Giuliani days when he actually was mayor of New York and did a phenomenal job of taking care of crime in New York because he took care of the squeegee people on the streets. You know, when you take care of the small crimes, the big crimes kind of evaporate. And the same kind of thought process here, again, put everyone's politics aside with anything. Just look at people's, you know, what actually works at that lower granular level. And when you do the same thing here, it all just cascades and takes care of itself from that point.
Yeah. Robin Drake, retired FBI special agent, chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program. As always, thank you so much for coming on and talking. His latest book right here, Unbreakable Alliances, available wherever books are sold. Go and check that out, please. Until next time, for Stacey, Todd, and Robin, I'm Tony Bruschi. We will talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers Podcast.